This is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me, gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
Welcome to it. It is 6 minutes past the hour here on this Thursday. I'm glad you're part of the program today and listening in. Michael Savage, you know who he is? Another talk show guy, right? Got the tar pounded out of him, apparently, during a visit to a restaurant yesterday with his toy poodle Teddy. Apparently, another patron took issue with him, started calling him Wiener, which is his actual last name is Wiener. Anyhow, I don't listen to Savage. I don't care for his program. Just my taste, and so it is. But I don't think the guy just got, you know, pummeled. Knocked down. Anyhow, he's pressing charges. Interesting thing. You know, you never know what we're willing to go through to come up here and talk to you every day. Of course, I might fight back a little bit better than Savage. I'm just saying, throwing that out there. So I was reading this other liberal rag, following a couple people on Twitter who keep claiming that this women's march that happened after the inauguration on January 21st, the biggest march in American history. And I'm like, I know it's not true, but as many of these things go, you know, it's not true, but you don't worry too much. But finally I went and looked just to see what the truth was about marches in American history. The biggest march was February of 2003, believe it or not, 15 million people worldwide on an anti-war march. The second biggest, 1982, 1 million people gathered in Central Park in New York City for an anti-nuke march. In April of 1993, 800,000 people got together for a gay rights march, and the list goes on and on and on. Anyhow, the march that attracted about 400,000 people to D.C. on January 21st, 2017, doesn't even make the top, ninth. I guess it makes the top 10, but not the top five. It just, you know, what's irritating to me is that people hear something said or see something written on Twitter or Facebook, and it's written by somebody that they like or that takes a point of view that they want to have, so they just go ahead and blindly accept it. You know, I have my opinions of the world, you may have noticed, and I share those with you because I have believed for a long time that you are entitled to my opinion. my mother used to say that. At any rate, about me, not about herself. But I'll go look at things, and if I'm wrong about something, I'm willing to take a different look at it. And I'm willing to correct it. You know, and I'm willing to... But here's something you're going to hear this morning. Obamacare is wonderful and shouldn't be changed. You're going to hear that this morning, even though we know that's not true. But here in a few minutes, I suspect you're going to hear that because there are big problems with Obamacare for a lot of folks. I'm one of the folks that got bounced off insurance 3 times. And my insurance costs more now than it ever did before. And so... so I have a problem with that. So anyhow, you're going to hear that. I just like to go out and correct things. You have the ability to go out and research and find out what the truth is today. And if you can't afford a smartphone or a computer, you've got a beautiful thing that's still out there called a public library. Yes, they still exist. And in fact, Michigan has lots of Carnegie libraries put together by Andrew Carnegie, who, of course, was a private individual who made hundreds of millions of dollars and shared. In the future, it seems that we won't be looking for 50 miles per gallon, at least not anytime soon, as Donald Trump here in Michigan yesterday said that needs to be rolled back, needs to be looked at. He pledged to review fuel efficiency standards set in place during the Obama administration, telling workers in Ypsilanti that his administration will ensure the regulations do not lead to job losses, and that's key. In fact, we had somebody, a couple of different guests here on the program here in the last month, said that's not even possible. Because what car companies do, They'll go build the SUVs and the pickup trucks and the big vehicles that Americans are buying. I saw gas yesterday, $2.15 a gallon. I thought, gosh, that's pretty cheap. And when gas is that cheap, people want big vehicles. They want room. They want room for the kids, the dogs, the groceries, or sometimes they just want to look cool, all right? And they like the bigger vehicle to look cool because there's a cool factor, right? So they've got all that going on. And SUVs and trucks are wildly popular, and little rolling coffins are not so cool to me. And you would agree. In fact, my son yesterday asked me, why are they fire trucks and why don't they make cars? Well, I had to explain to him the macho-ness of trucks and so forth, which is fine. Anyhow, so that's being rolled back. And speaking of oil and energy, this will create some more uproar on the left. A judge refusing to head off the imminent flow of oil in the Dakota Access Pipeline, likely clearing the way for operations to begin as early as next week. U.S. District Judge James Boasberg denied a request by the Standing Rock and Cheyenne River Sioux tribes to stop oil from flowing while the tribes appeal his decision, allowing pipeline construction to be completed. You know what's bizarre about this story is the relative lack of information that's actually been put out about the Dakota Access Pipeline. The Dakota Access Pipeline has been rerouted about 100 different times to avoid tribal land, to avoid to be anywhere near any burial grounds. The Owyhee Reservoir, that's been the focus of this conversation since the Dakota Access Pipeline story began. The pipeline doesn't even run under the Owyhee Reservoir. It was rerouted past that. It's nowhere near the water source. The people building the pipeline offered to build a new water source for anybody at Standing Rock. They'd put in new water source, you would never have a concern about fresh water. None of that mattered, which leads one to believe that maybe it had nothing to do with the Standing Rock Sioux and others, but maybe it had to do just with environmental activism. I throw that out there for your consideration because it just makes you wonder. And speaking of environmental activism and what Donald Trump is up to as we continue the conversation on energy here real quickly, the Trump administration planning to repeal Barack Obama's landmark 2015 rule setting standards for hydraulic fracturing on federal lands. Fracking, that is. Justice Department attorneys revealed the decision late yesterday in a filing with the Denver-based Court of Appeals for the 10th Circuit, where the federal government had been fighting against the oil and natural gas industry and conservative states to get the rule reinstated. It is the latest in a series of high-profile Obama environmental rules the Trump administration is repealing or working to change. So there you go, just getting rid of it. Earlier Wednesday, Trump asked the Environmental Protection Agency to consider weakening greenhouse gas emissions for cars, as we just mentioned. Trump has ordered the EPA to consider repealing Obama's clean water rule and will soon seek to undo the clean power plan as well, making it possible for coal-fired power plants to continue in places like Michigan and the upper Midwest. You see, energy is the key to our future. Sitting in the dark, the darkening is not going to help any of us. Sitting in the dark is not going to help any of us. That, I can assure you. It's 14 after. This is the Steve Gruber Show, brought to you this hour in part by DTE Energy, providing safe, reliable natural gas to businesses across Michigan. DTE Energy. Know you're on power.
Getting your day started with news from around the state and around the world. Common Sense Radio. This is the Steve Gruber Show.
All right, it is 18 after on this Thursday. Glad to have you along for the conversation. My next guest has a lot of conversations going on because he's part of the opposition party, if you will. Congressman Dan Kildee of Flint here with us today, Democrat. Congressman, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
Always a lot going on. This is a frenetic pace in Washington these days, a lot to keep up with. And I guess where I'd like to start today is the American Health Care Act and what it would take for a Democrat like yourself to find some common ground. I know the Republicans haven't even found common ground yet, but I'm trying to figure out what might work for people to improve Obamacare, which most people agree is not working for the vast majority of Americans. What say you?
Well, I mean, first of all, you have to start with a bit of a reality check in that the Republican plan uses the same basic architecture of the Affordable Care Act. So for all of the criticism, it basically uses the same structure. It's just different allocation of the resources. You know, there is the Medicaid expansion. They have a different way of doing it, and unfortunately that, you know, cuts a lot of people out of Medicaid. There is direct support for premiums, although in this case we feel like it's not aligned right. So what it would take for me would be just sort of recalibrating what they have put in place so that the Medicaid expansion is not so dramatically cut, not so many people kicked off Medicaid, and realigning the premium supports so you don't have such a heavy hit on that 50 to 65-year-old age group, which right now, the way they've got it structured, it's just a hit over the head. It's really big.
Well,
now,
I agree
that there should be changes to the Affordable Care Act. Don't get me wrong. But I don't think Republicans or Democrats right now are coming to the conclusion that this is the change that will work.
All right. So when it originally went through, did you support it when Obamacare originally went through? Were you a supporter?
Yeah, in broad form, there were things I didn't like about it. I wasn't here.
I understand
one
that.
One way or the other.
That's why I didn't ask you to vote for one of your supporters.
In general, I think there are some obvious structural problems with the Affordable Care Act, no question about it.
All right, so we look at this, and because what I'm trying to figure out is if it's even possible for Washington to work properly, because the CBO said that this thing is going to have problems, 24 million people off here in a few years, but the CBO was completely wrong about Obamacare, too, so I don't know how much faith I put in the Congressional Budget Office in their modeling and so forth.
Well, that's really an important point, because and I don't mean to be a defender of the CBO, because I've had my problems with some of their analyses, but it's a little disingenuous for the Republicans to worship at the footstep of the CBO every time the budget is put in place, but then pick apart this analysis. And here's the problem, and I don't mean to get too picky about this, but the CBO analysis about the Affordable Care Act assumed that the exchanges would be available across all states and that all states would have Medicaid expansion.
Right, which didn't happen.
Course,
so there's a big problem.
It did not happen. So it's a little unfair to the CBO to say that they should be held to the numbers that they projected when there was a major change.
I don't trust their numbers at all. I mean, I've seen so many irregularities with the predictions that they've made. They're not particularly reliable when it comes to numbers. So I agree, but it's politics. I think you'll give me that it's politics. The Republicans like the numbers when they like the numbers. Democrats do when they do. And when they don't, they complain about it. I think it goes across party lines on a situation.
Right.
Like
but
that.
I think we could all agree that the plan would mean that a lot of people would go from having coverage to not having coverage.
We could
argue about what the numbers
are. Well, that's true, but a lot of people wouldn't be required, and which I don't think the government has. Don't think it's the government's place to require somebody to have insurance, but that's neither here nor there. We do it for cars. Some people say we should do it for people. So it is. But right. You do agree there should be changes.
For sure.
Okay, so
sure.
Let me ask you this. Do you think, because I want to shift gears now, this travel ban now set aside by a judge in Hawaii, does the president of the United States have plenary power or not? Because it seems to me that anything this president is going to do is going to be opposed by somebody in Hawaii or California, Oregon, wherever. And the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is just going to play along with whatever stands in his way. Is there something wrong with putting a few weeks is what we're talking about, delay until we try to figure out how people come to this country from certain other countries that don't have particularly good ways of vetting people? Is that wrong?
Well, I think there are a couple issues. One, I do think there's a legitimate question about where the president's authority begins and ends. And you might be a little surprised to hear me say this. I think we have to be very careful about where the courts can intervene into what is clearly presidential authority. That's a separate question from whether or not this ban actually does anything, because I don't think it does anything to make us safer. But that's a separate question from whether or not it's under the president's prerogatives. I have not yet read the Hawaii judge's ruling. I think there's also a Maryland case.
I don't think that ruling's come out in Maryland. Did the Maryland rule? I'm not sure it came out yet. But see, I agree with you, and I give you credit, because I think you're a stand-up guy for this, for the fact that you say, I'm not sure that the court has that power. You know, whether we could debate the fact whether the ban makes us safe or not, but that's a separate issue. I agree with you on that, because if you start letting the courts dictate, it's a dangerous place to go, because whether it's a Republican in power or a Democrat or whatever the case may be, if people that are appointed and not elected start, well, basically doing your job and the executive branch's job, that's probably not the best place for us.
It is not. I agree. And I think policymaking, generally speaking, should be left to the executive and legislative branch. And the court's role should be to rule on constitutionality. And we should try to stick to that structure, because that's what the framers intended.
You're kind of a rebel out there, because you're a guy who has said on this program that you're willing to work with Donald Trump if the things are right. I've got about 30 seconds left. Did you agree with him saying that we need to revisit miles per gallon fuel efficiency standards to help work with automakers? We got about 20 seconds. What did you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, I want to work with him on that, but the details matter, because it has been those CAFE standards that even people within the auto sector has said has pushed them to innovate around fuel efficiency. So I want to be careful about how we proceed on that.
There you go. Congressman Kildee, always appreciate it.
Thank you much.
Thank you so much. Congressman Dan Kildee here on the Steve Gruber Show.
Taking a closer look at the stories that affect you most with a big dose of common sense.
All right, we're going to get it from a few different angles, trying to sort it out for you today. We had Dan Kildee's view from the Democratic side, which, by the way, I was, you know, there's something to be found there when he says, yeah, I'm willing to work to change Obamacare. This just isn't the bill that I think is going to do it right. But he has expressed on several occasions on this program, as Congressman Dan Kildee, to work with Donald Trump on things that he think makes sense. He's not one of these obstructionists, never Trump, never work with Trump, stand in the way of everything mentality. At least he doesn't say so. So I'm going to take him at his word on that. In a minute here, we're going to have Congressman Tim Walberg weigh in on the American Health Care Act and some other things as well. But before we get there, former member of Congress, Dr. Nan Hayworth, she's been with us before, current chair of Conserve America, an ophthalmologist with degrees from Princeton and Cornell, far smarter than I am, clearly, and the only female physician to ever be a member of Congress. Doctor, welcome back to the program.
Oh, Steve, it's a privilege to be with you. And as you know, degrees are nice to have, no question, but it's really what we're talking about is everybody's, expecting everybody's contribution, everybody's common sense, and everybody's smarts about how we regulate the economy and how we grow jobs, which is more to the point. Regulations are killing our economy.
I agree with that.
And
there's no question.
That's what President Trump's all about.
Yeah, and because you bring me back to something, degrees are nice, and you've got a couple of nice ones, and I'm sure they're on your wall, as they should be, because it's quite an accomplishment. However, the thing that America needs more than more college degrees, because, good Lord, a lot of people go to college and end up in debt and never use those degrees and spend the next 25 years of their life digging out of a hole that they didn't really need to dig. What we need is work ethic.
True, and thanks federal government for that, too.
Well, yeah, you can follow how that worked. As soon as the federal government became the primary institution, if you will, to make loans for education, the cost of education skyrocketed, because the government university said, well, look at that. They've got all the money, so we're going to keep raising rates on the kids. And what happened is we have a whole generation of kids, of young people, that are on the hook to the federal government, which means when people come along and say, hey, you know what, we might cut those rates a little bit, why don't you vote for us? You're buying votes.
Exactly. Now, it's a pernicious cycle, Steve. It doesn't help anyone. It just impoverishes all of us, while the folks who lobby for, if you will, you know, the, as you said, the higher education institutions who keep hiking prices because they know Uncle Sam's going to pay for it and voters are going to demand it. And there you go. And that happens with every sector of the economy that the federal government touches with subsidies, including health care, including housing and mortgages, you know, a lot of parts of the financial sector, and, of course, the energy industry, too.
That's right. The government can't run anything. The government's good at a few things. They're good at building big machines that break and destroy other big machines and kill people. They're good at war. But as far as running things in an efficient manner, no, ma'am. Not at all.
No. You're absolutely right. And the founders knew that. they said, look, the federal government should do what the people and the states can't do. And what is that? Well, it is national defense. And a certain piece of it, yes, in this modern era, a certain piece of it is, in fact, environmental protection. And as the chair, Conserve America is a great organization. We're advocating for environmental protections and sustainability and conservation measures done in a way that doesn't hurt our economy, that goes for the win-win. And that's what the president's
trying to do.
See,
you hit the key point here, Doctor, and that is this. I am a conservationist, and I am. But I'm not an environmentalist because I think an environmentalist is a political activist. A conservationist is somebody like myself who does some hunting and some fishing and spends time out in the woods with my family and time on the beach. I'm a conservationist, and I want clean water and clean air, but I don't want it to the point that I can't walk into. You know, if environmentalists had their way, they'd run a fence around Montana and never let anybody walk inside of it. That's what they would do, and it's true.
That's
not logical.
Right. Well, and I think we've talked about it before, Steve, that the so-called precautionary principle. You know, in an ideal world, you never get into a car accident, right? Well, that basically means you're never going to drive. You're never going to get anywhere. We are here on our planet. We do have limited resources, but it's appropriate for us as human beings, as citizens of the United States, to be able to utilize our resources. And if we're going to live for generations more and leave a legacy for our kids, we've got to do that right. But there is a sensible balance. The EPA under the Obama administration went too far in a lot of ways. And I know we talked about that when last I had the pleasure of speaking with you. But certainly in terms of Michigan, our listeners here today, Michigan's economy has suffered terribly because the great men and women who work in our automobile industry have basically had some very heavy handcuffs put on them by regulation.
Well, they sure have. And let me ask you about this. We're with Dr. Nan Hayworth here on the program, former member of Congress. All right, here are some of the regulations rolled back. The clean water rule is being rolled back so that my mud puddle is now free of federal regulation on my small farm. Donald Trump is going to repeal the Obama fracking rule that basically handcuffed the energy industry. Now it seems that the Dakota Access Pipeline is going to possibly go into use as soon as next week. Part of that pipeline is going to start flowing next week. A judge refusing to step in and stop that. The thing that people don't know about Dakota Access, it's been changed 100 times in its direction. It does not go under the Owyhee Reservoir. It doesn't even go across native land anymore. And yet the Standing Rock tribe still trying to fight it, even though it doesn't even affect them anymore. It's baffling.
Right.
So how do we get some of these things? Because I want clean air and clean water, but how do you tell these activists that we're on the same side here, but we don't have to go back to riding bicycles everywhere?
Well, and that's just it. And you know what it is, Steve? It's an informed American public. It's folks like your listeners who understand that just what you said about the Dakota Access Pipeline. You know, if you didn't get the facts about it, maybe you would feel as though, we should respect tribal lands, and of course we should, and not put the pipeline through. But guess what? It's not going through tribal lands. If you don't know that, if you don't know the facts, if you don't know the facts about a pond or a puddle being on Steve Gruber's farmland, not being water that's actually going to affect the kind of water quality issues we talk about with the clean water laws that we've had for decades, those arguments might sound plausible, but you won't appreciate the cost that comes with them. That's the hidden losses. Well, they're not hidden. The losses aren't hidden, but the causes can be excessive regulation from all different departments of the United States government eventually cost us jobs.
Well, it does.
That accumulation over decades has gotten us where we are now.
My biggest concern is, the loss of private property rights when they say that, well, if I can they control my puddle, then basically they control my land and they come out. Now, what we have to wait and see what happens today, Doctor, is what the budget looks like, because it's going to be unveiled, and it looks like the EPA is going to be cut by more than 25%. I'll give you 15 seconds for the last word. Good idea, bad idea? Of course, we'll have you back soon, but what do you think?
EPA during the Obama administration overreached badly, harmed American pocketbooks and jobs, and did not net benefit the environment. So, yeah, we do need to cut back on what the EPA was doing under the previous administration. It's okay to institute some budget cuts that affect the promulgation of excessive regulation.
Covering Michigan and the world from his bunker below the bridge, here is Steve Gruber.
Been 40 days since I don't know when. I just saw her with my best friend. Do you know what I mean?
All right, welcome back to it. It is 45 after. Did you say he's there? Oh. We were having problems with our screens earlier, so if Alex and I are talking here, closed circuit, don't worry about it, folks. We're having a screen issue, so I'm just trying to keep it straight as to what we have and what we don't. The Justice Department has sued for records about that meeting on the tarmac. You remember Loretta Lynch, former President Bill Clinton, while his wife, Hillary Clinton, was running for president. They got together, just this happenstance meeting in Phoenix on the tarmac there. Well, the conservative nonprofit watchdog group filed the suit, as Judicial Watch now filing the suit to look into what happened there. Because without Judicial Watch, we wouldn't have a lot of these things going on. So they're asking for a record of the meetings about Loretta Lynch and Bill Clinton on the tarmac in Arizona. So we'll keep you updated on that. Now, Congressman Tim Walberg joining me from Michigan 7th District, a Republican. Congressman, welcome back to the program.
Good to be back. Good morning to you all.
Getting a lot of perspectives here on this today, but let's talk about the American Health Care Act. Doesn't seem to be in good health today. A lot of infighting, a lot of finger pointing, a lot of, well, frankly, chaos. I've heard some people suggest that maybe they should take everybody involved, get a big room, send you in there, lock the door, send in sandwiches from time to time, and only allow bathroom privileges if things are getting accomplished. Where are we on it?
Well, that's not what we're hearing here. And I heard Sean Hannity last night talking with Newt Gingrich about that. And that's not what's happening. We met with Mike Pence twice yesterday in Republican Study Committee, and then later on the full Republican conference. The president, our leadership, and the overwhelming majority of Republicans in the House are on the same page and moving forward. We're right on track. The only thing that changed was one snow day, and as of probably this afternoon, we'll be back on schedule, our 200-day schedule to pass, repeal, and replace Obamacare. There are a few people that are whipping or reporting that they're going to oppose it unless some changes are made. But in the end, I think they're going to vote for it. And when you have the president going around the country yesterday in Michigan and Tennessee and saying that he's fully supportive of what's being put forward in our plan, that says a lot. And so it's a shame that there's some misreporting that's going on, trying to whip up some frenzy.
The president did say during his travels that there will be some more negotiations involved, which, yeah, I guess makes sense.
Sure. I mean, that's been going on. This has been a bottom-up approach. It's gone on for almost a year now. And the Better Way plan was our plan. It still is. We passed in a 28-hour marathon session in Energy and Commerce last week. The plan, coming from the energy side, Energy and Commerce side, and then Ways and Means, in an 18-hour marathon, passed their portion of it. Today, that will be dealt with in the Budget Committee, and next week, the Rules Committee will put it forward for a vote on the floor of the House. This is the first step. You and I have talked about that. You understand this is the first step in a three-bucket process. Reconciliation can only do so much. It has to deal with revenue. And then Tom Price has already started. A letter was sent out yesterday by the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Tom Price, and the CMS Director to all the governors saying, we are ready and willing and prepared to receive your request for waivers to reform, restructure, make better the Medicaid system in your state. We're open to that, unlike past administration. We want it to work for the people who have those needs. And then comes the final final bill. That'll be a little bit more difficult. But it'll be far less in number of issues that's deal with because of the first two buckets that we're going to pass.
All right. So let me ask you this. Congressman Dan Kildee, one of your colleagues from Michigan on the program here a little while ago, he said that there are certain things that he can find that he can be flexible with and work with. Not in his current state, but, you know, he's open to the conversation. At least he says so here. But he says also that the current Republican plan uses much of the same structure that Obamacare used and a lot of the similar in Medicaid expansion, for example, he cited, and said that there aren't that big of changes. He said, so for Republicans who have been dead set against Obamacare for all of these years, to bring something in that has so many similarities in so many areas seems kind of unusual. What do you say to that?
Well, I'd ask my friend Dan why he didn't support the reconciliation bill of 2015 that repealed Obamacare. If indeed that's the same, if we're putting forward the same plan as Obamacare, it's just not true. And that's why there won't be a single Democrat probably that will support this plan as we move forward, because they're hanging on to Obamacare. The only thing is Medicaid expansion. There'll be a phase-out period for that. We can't take states and just throw it out with nothing in its place. And so the bottom line is, this is what we told the people we would do. This is what the president said he would do. We'll repeal and replace Obamacare, bringing in a competition-based, patient-centered approach that says the doctor and the patient are the two people most important in the system, and then we'll put in place the competition necessary and the variety to pay for it through insurance plans that will be competing nationwide and not just in one state or another.
One quick procedural question from a listener. If Obamacare was passed with less than 60 votes, why can't Republicans find a way to repeal it altogether with less than 60 votes in the U.S. Senate, of course? That comes from Craig. We've only got about 30 seconds left. Why couldn't it have just been done?
Well, again, that's why we're using reconciliation, because we won't need 60 votes. The Democrats used reconciliation to pass the Affordable Care Act in the first place.
And that's how they got it through with less than 60 votes.
That's how they got it through.
There you go. They did it. I call it a parliamentary trick the way it was put through. What you're doing is more in line with what's happened in years past. You know, we only need about 2 hours to talk about this, Congressman, but unfortunately we only have a few minutes each time. But go do your work, and we will talk more about it the next time we chat.
Look forward to it, and thanks for giving the opportunity.
Congressman Tim Walberg, trying to sort it out for you. We're trying to do the same for you. 52 after on a Thursday. You're listening to The Steve Gruber Show.